How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Families have been fleeing to Illinois to protect their transgender and non-binary children from anti-trans laws and enroll them in more inclusive schools. By this time last year, at least 14 states passed laws regulating bathroom access, sports participation, or pronoun and name changes, specifically in K-12 schools. That's according to a Chalk Beach, Chicago analysis of American Civil Liberties Union data. But across the nation, many educators are fighting back and confronting these school policies. And a new book is hoping to give teachers a guide to create more inclusive classrooms, no matter the laws in their state. It's called The Advocate Educator's Handbook. So I sat down with the co-authors. Rebecca Kling is a nationally known transgender activist based here in Chicago. And Vanessa Ford is a children's book author, former educator, and parent to a trans child. As I mentioned, this handbook comes at a time when there are a lot of laws and policies targeting trans children. So I started off by asking Rebecca how that factored into the writing of this book. Here's Rebecca.
Writing this book was something that felt very timely, even as we were seeing this increase in pushback. Because one of the things that we know and one of the things that has changed dramatically over the last few decades is there are more trans folks in people's communities. There are more people saying, oh, my friend's kid is trans, or my babysitter is trans, or my dog walker's nephew's child's whatever is trans.
Yeah.
And there's more of a need for educators who want to offer that proactive support. And unfortunately, the other side of that coin is there are more places where it's become difficult to do that because of policies or legal restrictions.
Well, this week, the Supreme Court agreed to review a Tennessee law that restricts gender-affirming care for minors. I want to get your reaction to that.
I want to be clear that I am not a lawyer and I'm not a medical provider, so I want to give that context. I am a trans person who's worked with hundreds, if not thousands, of trans young people over the years. And in general, courts are ruling that these bans are discriminatory, that healthcare is healthcare, and that that includes access for trans folks, including trans youth, and that the best available data shows that providing healthcare to trans youth is the right thing to do, and that private medical decisions are for youth and their families and their doctors to decide, mm-hmm. not politicians and not the politicized Supreme Court.
How do you think this could impact laws targeting trans kids in schools?
Unfortunately, what we see is that these laws are coming together and offered in parallel. So the same folks who are trying to make it more difficult for trans youth to be students are also trying to make it more difficult for trans youth to access care. Mm-hmm. And it's not a coincidence, are often the same people who are trying to make it harder to access abortion or contraceptive access, or the same people who are making it more difficult to talk about race and racism in schools and school curriculums. And this is a part of a coordinated nationwide effort to attack trans folks, to attack people of color, to attack access to reproductive health care, and all of those things are connected.
Vanessa, let's bring you in here. Many of the laws across the country, they're associated with school policy. What would you say are the biggest issues facing educators right now?
My goodness, there are so many issues facing educators. When COVID hit, everything got turned on a dime and teachers had to do what they do best, right? They had to get to know their students, get to know systems, put them in place and make sure their students and their families were okay. At the same time, as we came out of this, we are seeing, as Rebecca noted, more and more of our youth coming out as trans and non-binary. And for some reason, this has become the big targeted focus of others when the population is not that large, right?
Yeah.
So when educators are thinking, how can I address this? We tried to create a framework that was easy for them, that they could implement right away, and where they could hear from experts from around the country so that they do not need to go it alone. Because one thing is for sure, educators are excellent networkers and problem solvers. And I don't think they're going to back down when it comes to making sure their kids are thriving, especially their trans and non-binary ones.
Rebecca, what are some creative ways that teachers are responding to these anti-trans school policies?
Absolutely. One of the things that we talk about is the difference of policy and practice. So there can be the best policies in the world. If they're not being followed, then what good are they? And there can be amazing educators doing amazing things. But if the policy isn't there in writing, when a new principal or new superintendent comes in, or even when a student goes to a different classroom, those things can be upended. So we're seeing, even in places where there are harmful policies or restrictive policies, we're seeing educators in Florida who are still getting together outside of the school system to exchange resources, to share, to commiserate, to brainstorm. We spoke with an educator in Texas who, when there were restrictions on whether or not that educator could call trans youth by the names or pronouns they were asking to be called, this educator started using last names for all of their students and saying, if I can't call students what they want to be called by for a first name basis, I'm going to treat everyone equally and have everyone by their last name.
What do you think of that?
I think that in a perfect world, we would have supportive and affirming policies. I think in places where educators are feeling these restrictions, they're making do with supporting in the ways that they can. And that is really incredible to me, that the bravery and the power of some of these educators to say, even if the policy says something that's going to harm my students, I'm going to find a way as much as I can to support them.
Vanessa, how do you think educators should navigate pushback to creating inclusive classrooms?
I think it has a number of levels. So it depends on where you are in education. If you are a classroom teacher, you really want to depend on and ensure that your school leader and administrator is behind you. We often say, look at the mission and vision statement of your school. Inevitably, it will say something like all children, right? All children in this school deserve safe places in order to thrive. Well, if that is the mission, that must include trans and non-binary youth as well. The other piece is getting connected to local organizations. And national unions like the NEA and AFT have strong LGBTQ supports, conferences, and networks. Educators will find ways to what we call disrupt, whether that is bullying individual student to student, or what Tim M. West calls legislative bullying. And educators are not backing down.
Well, you write in the book about identifying your risk, Vanessa.
Yes,
What does that look like?
So one of the things that we want to be very clear about is that legislation keeps coming at a rapid pace across the country in dozens of states, targeting trans youth and educators. So before an educator determines, I'm going to do X to support my student if Y is illegal. For example, I'm going to use they, them pronouns if I have been told that I am not allowed to. I would say that to that educator, identify your risk. Do you have a family that you need to take care of? Are you on your own? Do you have additional supports? Do you have a union support? Do you have the support of your administrator? What is the community like? And what are you going to need to do to be able to best support that student and understand the risk? Because it does take real risk that you're willing to put in. And we interviewed educators who said, I will not risk my job, but I will do what I can in the margins to ensure my students are thriving. And we had others who said, I'm an educator. I was born for this, and I will risk absolutely everything and do what's best for students. We can't make that determination, but it's really critical that you identify the risk and then find those to support you to mitigate it.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
You write in the book, Rebecca, about four principles, educate, affirm, include, and disrupt. Let's talk more about that. Walk us through each of them and just sort of how they're applied, how they can be applied.
In a perfect world, all of these things are happening simultaneously. But the reality is that we can often only focus on one area at a time. So what we're encouraging folks to think about is how do you educate faculty and staff? And that's both classroom teachers as well as folks who are working in the lunchroom and maybe seeing different experiences of bullying, or who are working at the line for the buses and are seeing different ways that kids are interacting. So you're educating faculty and staff, affirming through policy and practice, again, making sure that both the written policy of the school and the district and the way that policy actually works on a day-to-day is affirming.
Making sure it matches what's actually happening.
Yes. Including in curriculum and culture. And so that's both things like what is being taught, what posters are on the wall, how are you talking about student bodies in emails or on the website. And then the last one there is disrupt pushback. So that's educating faculty and staff, affirming through both policy and practice, including in curriculum and culture, and disrupting pushback.
So here's the thing, Vanessa, even if laws restricting school policy are struck down, there can be still discrimination at the district level, at the school level, and the teacher level.
Without question. Yes.
We've been talking in this conversation about advice for teachers, but I wonder what recommendations you have for parents.
So many recommendations. Over the last 9 years since my child transitioned, we've been lucky enough to be able to get to know families from around the country at different stages in this journey. And one thing is clear, parents want what's best for their children. Parents love their children. And I would say to any parent who has a child who is exhibiting gender nonconformity or talking about being trans, to reach out to other families and communities to find the supports that you need to be able to best support your child. Because we know that supported youth thrive. We know it reduces suicidality and risk. We know that these supportive environments make a difference. And so reach out to people. If you can't find anybody in your state, Rebecca and I always say, reach out to us. We're easy to find and we can help network for you. The other piece is, if you have a child transitioning, make sure to meet with your school. Put together something like a gender support plan, which we have examples of in the book and that are available online. Things that tell the school who is safe around your child, who knows about your child's identity, what to do on field trips, overnight trips, all of those different pieces. And finally, it's a scary time to be a parent right now, period, let alone a parent of a transgender child as these attacks are coming down. And as we're seeing this week with the SCOTUS potentially hearing the Tennessee case, all I have to say to educators and parents is, as our children are being targeted, their mental health is being targeted as well. Mm. And so while educators may not be thinking about these bans on gender-affirming care, imagine a child who's had their medical care removed from them, and they have to go to school and exist in this space. Imagine their mental health. That is where educators are going to see the biggest impact, I believe.
And on that note, one of my favorite features of the Advocate Educators Handbook is the sprinklings of trans joy.
That was something that was very important to us. So both Vanessa as a parent and a former classroom teacher, myself as a trans person and someone who's worked with many, many trans youth, that trans youth are excited about the same things that all kids are. Some of them are excited about their sports team or the extracurriculars they're involved in or the new video game they just got. Some of them are deeply excited about their identity and about being trans or being non-binary and being able to celebrate that in their communities and hopefully in school as well. And that it can be easy and understandable, completely understandable, to focus on the things that are hard or the things that are scary.
Yeah.
It's also really important to uplift the things that are joyful.
Vanessa, in what ways have you seen trans joy apparent in your child?
Oh my gosh, as the tears would start to flow, because there's nothing more that a parent wants to see than their child being joyful. I would say that trans joy exists in my child's friend group, that they have this amazing group of friends that they've formed over the years who support them. And they all like to do what kids like to do: video games, anime, going to the corner store with their dollars to get some candy, right? These are things that my child is doing. But the joy in that is that they can just live as their authentic self. Their friends accept them. And anytime we know as adults, we can show up as who we are to our friend group, it just feels so wonderful. So I particularly like a good sleepover with hearing the giggling from the other room that I fall asleep to. That is trans joy.
I want to hear from you both on this. How do you think that we can better involve trans youth in these conversations? You first, Vanessa.
Sure. I think there's two things to consider. The first is you want to be able to advocate for trans youth, but we also made a real effort to talk about advocating with trans youth, because not every trans youth is going to want to be an activist, an advocate. They're just wanting to live their lives, but some are. So understanding the nuances of that is really critical. We interviewed Stella, and she talked about a teacher asking her to review the curriculum for accuracy before it being taught. That is not what we want to put on our students. What we may want to put on our students is, we have an opportunity to speak to a panel of teachers, and I see that you have a lot of public speaking skills and you're an advocate. Would you like to take part in that? Right? So understanding where to put students in and also when to pull back and elevate their voice instead from the adult perspective.
Nice. Rebecca.
To give another example, we spoke with an amazing librarian who didn't want to put students on the spot to have to testify before a city council.
Yes.
And so she asked them for their thoughts on why accessing books about LGBTQ identity was so important. And then she read those remarks to the city council. So she wasn't forcing those students to necessarily out themselves or to put themselves in a public spotlight, but still made sure to uplift their voices. And to give a sort of broader idea of, there are so many things that might be important to a particular school's trans population or non-binary population. And in the book, we talk about a lot of the things that might be important. Names on attendance sheets, restroom and locker room access, curriculum, after-school activities. But we can't tell a particular teacher or a particular parent what their youth want to focus on or what the priorities are in that classroom or that school or that district.
Yeah.
And that's where those conversations become so important.
Because everyone's different.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, you also work for a summer camp for trans and non-binary kids. What's it been like to be a mentor in that space?
Absolutely. So I work with Harbor Camps for more than a decade, which is a camp for trans and non-binary youth that I think the first campers are just arriving this week for summer 2024. And part of what has been so incredible about that is the multi-generational trans support. So it's trans adults who are running the camp, working with increasingly trans counselors and staff, who are working with trans counselors in training, who are working with trans campers. We just had some of our first former campers go through our CIT program and now are helping run the camp that they went to as young people. And there have always been trans elders helping trans young people learn. The way that this has been structured and formalized and made into a long-lasting program of trans people running a camp with trans adults for trans youth, it gives me chills to think about of things that simply didn't exist in the world when I was growing up or when lots of trans folks were growing up.
Yeah. Well, as you alluded to earlier, needs vary here. We're all different. While some trans kids want to get involved in advocacy, others aren't interested. And none of them deserve to face discrimination.
Exactly. Right?
That's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
So, how can we as adults do better to protect them? Vanessa, you first.
I would say start with educating yourself. Understand what your policies are in your state, county, district, and school level. Understand that there's non-discrimination language in place. See what organizations are serving youth and really try to bite through that noise that the opposition is making that is just not supported by the science or the research. Reach out, get connected, And if able, donate your time, donate your money. And we can always get people out to vote as well.
Rebecca?
Absolutely. The thing that I would remind folks is the power of saying, I'm not an expert, but. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that there are a lot of connected issues. And in the progressive movement, we talk a lot about intersectional issues of, I'm not an expert in race and racism, but that thing you said just made me really uncomfortable. I'm not an expert in immigration, but that framing doesn't seem right to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert in disability access, but having this without a lift or a wheelchair ramp seems like not all of our population is going to be able to attend. And I think the same thing is true with trans and non-binary folks. I want to empower listeners to say, I'm not an expert, but I want to make sure all students, including trans students, are supported. I'm not an expert, but I want to make sure we're not excluding kids unfairly. I'm not an expert, but it's still really important to call kids what they want to be called. And those are all amazing places to start with the core belief that all young people, including trans people, deserve to be safe and supported at school. And that beyond that, there's tons of things you can learn and do and grow to be specific. But that core tenet of protection, of safety, of support can be so powerful even without that expertise.
We've been speaking to Rebecca Kling and Vanessa Ford, the co-authors of The Advocate Educator's Handbook, Creating Schools Where Transgender and Non-Binary Students Thrive. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you, Sasha. Take good care.
You too. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Max Lubers. It was edited by Meha Ahmed. Tune into the podcast tomorrow afternoon to hear directly from transgender teens who are leading their own advocacy efforts. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.